It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell is with us. Hi, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. What are we talking about today?
Ben, let's continue to talk about land ownership in its form as, you know, tenants in common. In other words, undivided interest in land ownership. And those are some big words. What do I mean by that? Ben, you know, it is just very common, and our listeners will relate to this, that they inherit a home or a piece of property with their brothers and sisters.
Right, right.
A will says, I hereby devise and bequeath the rest residue of my estate to my four children. Well, this means that these four children now own the family home or own the lot or the farm or whatever the real property might be. And as we can imagine, the plot can begin to thicken from there. What's important to say, a couple of things that I think our listeners need to hear, is that when you own an undivided interest in real property, which is what that is, it means that you actually have the right to possess the whole. This is a confusing, substantive law, case law, fact that even though you own, let's say, 25% of the property because your siblings own also, there are four of you and each of you own 25%. The bottom line is that even though you own 25%, you are able to possess or control the whole. And this is one of the tenets, if you will, of an undivided tenants in common interest in the state of North Carolina. And we can only imagine what that means. So in other words, you know, the other 75% can't get together and overrule the 25% owner and boot them off the property.
Right.
They can't keep the 25% owner from farming the property or from leasing the property or improving the property. They have an absolute right to be on that property. So we can only imagine, Ben, how complicated at times this can become. Now, the other issue that needs to be discussed is that when we go to sell the property and it's owned by the four siblings or the three siblings, we are going to then need, when we go to sell the property, which oftentimes happens in an estate situation,
right,
because they've inherited the property. They each have their own homes at this point many times. Not always, but many times. And they collectively have said, you know, we can't afford to continue to keep up mom and dad's home. We're just going to put it on the market and go ahead and sell it.
Right.
And divide the money, you know, three ways if they're three siblings or four ways if they're four, two ways if they're two. Well, when we go to convey the title, to the buyer, the other wrinkle that we run into is that the deed is going to need to be signed by the three or the four siblings, however many there happen to be. But there's going to have to be the joinder of their spouse in the state of North Carolina. This, of course, really confuses folks and sometimes upsets them because they say to me, they say, well, but Mr. Harvell, you know, this is inherited property. You know, my wife doesn't have anything to do with this property. My husband isn't involved in this. I inherited this from my parents with my brother and my sister. Why in the world are you having to involve my spouse? And so here we are with that issue, Ben, and it can be a real sticky wicket at times. Sometimes there will be a pending divorce.
Right.
What does that mean? Sometimes there's just estrangement. Sometimes there's no issue at all. We like those files, don't we? Where the spouse is just absolutely, absolutely, you know, we've been married for 35 years, very solid marriage, no problem with me coming into the office and signing the deed. Even then, you usually get a question from that spouse where they're like, why am I here? Mm-hmm. You know, this was property that my husband, you know, inherited from his parents, and I don't understand why I'm in the office. There's a lot of curiosity, if you will, around this issue. But the bottom line is that in the state of North Carolina, due to inheritance rights that vest in a spouse relative to the interest of their husband and or wife, they have to join in the deed to convey away, if you will, their rights in their spouse's estate under North Carolina state law. So the joinder of the spouse is going to be necessary. The joinder of all of the undivided interest holders.
Mm-hmm.
We have a file right now in our office where, of course, you know, there were four children, but a couple of those children have died and they then had children. So, you know, we're looking at a deed that has, you know, 14 signatures in order to get the title out and get it cleared to the purchaser, because you've got each and every one of those heirs, and then you've got, of course, their spouses.
And you have said, you said last week that marriage is held up in such a high regard in North Carolina law, in many state laws, but in North Carolina law, is that this is going to dominate this discussion here.
Well, we've talked about that many times on the program. There are probably, I mean, I've been a lawyer for a while now, and I guess two things that, that we see that the state of North Carolina, and it's really this way in most states, is the highest and best use of real property.
Mm-hmm.
Real property is held to a very high respected status, and therefore the law supports, you know, the highest and best use of real property. And there are many statutes that help folks, as we've discussed on the program, through this minefield of undivided interest. We discussed, you know, that one of the undivided interest holders can petition the clerk of court to divide the property, a petition to partition out their interest and force a resolution to the fact that three people or four people own this property. And North Carolina is going to expedite that process in the special proceedings section of our courts so as to, you know, again, make that land the highest and best use. So absolutely, we see repetitively, Ben, where land ownership has a very high status. And then you're right beside that is the interest of the spouse in the estate of their husband or wife, whatever the case might be. The spouse in North Carolina, the surviving spouse, if you will, has, again, an elevated status.
Mm-hmm.
They have the right to file for a year's support against the assets of the estate of their spouse to the exclusion of the creditors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There is tenancy by entirety property
mm-hmm.
where they inherit the property by operation of law instanter upon the death of their spouse to the exclusion again of the creditors.
Mm-hmm.
There are tax ramifications and benefits, the unlimited marital deduction.
Mm-hmm.
The list of laws that, again, elevate the status of the surviving spouse and or the spouse in the state of North Carolina are very significant. They are the preferred, if you will, appointment as administrator of the spouse's estate when there is no will. They are the preferred guardian when there is no power of attorney. Over and over and over again, we see where the law supports and elevates the status of the spouse. And over and over again, we see where the law elevates the status of land holding in the state of North Carolina.
So all of that is to say that, you know, the spouse is going to have to sign off on the deed.
They are. They are.
And like you said, it can. You may have a divorce and a pending.
Correct. This signature, Ben, is not about the fact that they, as the spouse, had an interest in the estate of their in-law. This is about the fact that they have an interest in the estate of their wife, their husband, whatever the case might be. Once they inherited the property, the husband or the wife, now that spouse has an interest in their interest, or a spousal interest. It's a limited interest, but it still exists. And therefore, when their spouse goes to do a deed, they need to join in the conveyance.
Okay. We'll have more to come in a moment here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Cecil Harvell, our guest. And if you would like to call in, 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. We were talking about dividing property, and sometimes, Cecil, that can have some wrinkles in it.
Well, there's no question about that. And, Ben, I guess much of this discussion begs the question, well, what do we do about this as a family? Goodness gracious, Mr. Harvell, how do we help make things go a bit smoother for our family in that there are four children? And one of the children maybe, you know, is not in good health and could die and has three children. What are some things that we can do? And so one of the most important things that one can do is to have a well-drafted last will and testament. That can address some of these issues. A well-drafted, durable power of attorney that again can address some of these issues if we have an incompetency with the principal. So, there are definitely some things that we can do. There, of course, is if it's a property that is going to remain in the family, but we want to center the control with one or two of the children, like, say, a family farm or a large commercial rental, you know, property, something of that nature, then we would move to maybe considering, you know, a limited liability company where the membership interest can be, you know, voting, non-voting, and, of course, put the control with the particular child and or children. Again, that would also keep the out conveyance from having to require all the heirs to sign because the title would be in the limited liability company, which is like a corporation that then would only require the signature of the managing partner. So there are some things that we can look at. The other thing that a well-drafted last will and testament is going to do is going to have provisions that, of course, make it clear that if before the property is sold or while it's being marketed, or even while a decision is yet to be made as to the ultimate disposition of this real property, it's very likely that one of the children is having to carry the cost of the property.
Very often.
The insurance, the taxes, maybe even there is a small mortgage or equity line on the property. And so one of the children steps up to the plate and provides for the maintenance, the repair, the upkeep, if you will, on the property. And so the question becomes, well, fine, thank goodness this child was able to financially maintain the property so that it would not go into disrepair or foreclosure. But what happens when the property is sold? Does this child then have the right to be reimbursed for the amount of resources that the one child put in the property to the exclusion of the other children? And the answer is yes, but it's nice when that is in writing. As opposed to having to rely on the case law in the state of North Carolina as to contribution and unjust enrichment between
yes.
interest of tenants in common.
In other words, so someone wouldn't have to be petitioning to be reimbursed. It would be already taken care of in
it
the provisions.
It would be. And also, there's full knowledge at mm-hmm. that point. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way grandmama and granddaddy set it up. It's in their writing. It's mm-hmm. in their will. It's in their trust. And this the benefit of having something that the heirs can see and read and understand mm-hmm. in terms of knowing that they're going to need to reimburse the person in the family that carried the expenses
right.
of the property for a while, you know, it's just worth its weight in gold, as opposed to that issue just being, you know, nebulous and mm-hmm. not well defined in writing.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. But these are sticky wickets for a lot of families, too, and especially if no will is present, then it really throws a wrench into it.
Well, it does, because at that point you are operating under, you know, an administration of an estate, intestate succession, and the law and the property will pass according to the statutes of North Carolina. But these guidelines that we've talked about reimbursement, about who is in control of the property in the meantime, things of that nature, you're having to rely now completely upon the statutes and the case law in North Carolina, as opposed to being able to kind of hang your hat on the written document.
Mm-hmm.
We see over and over again, Ben, in the law where our courts default to the document.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what does the contract say about the awarding of attorney fees?
Right.
Well, what does the will say about the payment of a trustee fee?
Mm-hmm.
What does the power of attorney have to say about the payment of the agent under the power of attorney? The rendering of accountings to the other heirs.
Mm-hmm.
The court is many times going to ask, what does the document say? And default to the document. Now, the document that, and this is any document, a contract, a will, mm-hmm. a power of attorney, a trust agreement, it's not going to necessarily be 100% binding mm-hmm. on the court of appropriate jurisdiction, but it's going to be a significant piece of evidence.
Right.
It's going to be a guideline to the court. And the court is most likely, statistically, mm-hmm. going to honor the document unless there's some reason not to honor the document.
Right.
So again, we need our documents to be clear on these issues. We need them to address some of these concerns that we're talking about today and we've talked about at other programs. And that, more than anything else, will help this family smooth transition of the property.
Okay. All right. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. You can reach us at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. Welcome back here. Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for making us a part of your day here today. And every Tuesday, we get a chance to talk about your legal life with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. Cecil's in the studio with us today. And we're talking about, well, we had in past weeks, we were talking about the petition to partition. We're kind of moving on into the other things that you do to help prevent some of that.
It is. And I just think, Ben, it's a great topic to just let our listeners hear about about the law, if you will, mm-hmm. relative to undivided interest in real property. I mean, so many of our listeners have inherited property with their brother or their sister or their first cousin, whatever the case might be here in Eastern North Carolina. Family farms, agricultural property, property that's just been in the family for a while. And folks really wonder, what in the world do I do with this? I know that I own a significant portion of the property, but I don't own all the property. You know, mm-hmm. I own it with my first cousin or my aunt or my uncle. And there's a lot of questions about this interest of property that is held as an undivided interest. I will just mention that the alternative, which is nice when it happens,
right.
but it's really the exception, is fee simple ownership. Mm-hmm. That means that you own the whole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's your property. There are no other interest holders in the property. You have fee simple ownership in the land, in the house. This, of course, is easy and a nice way to be, but is the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our properties, and this may surprise our listeners, most of our properties, believe it or not, in Eastern North Carolina are held in undivided interest holdings. And that's due to, you know, the agricultural history of mm-hmm. our area,
right.
The farms, the timberlands, the agricultural nature, some of the larger tracts. They just many times are owned undivided interest, notwithstanding the fact property that gets passed on
mm-hmm.
is passed on in undivided interest to the children, the grandchildren, etc. And so all this land sits out there in Eastern North Carolina being held in these undivided interest.
You mentioned right mm-hmm. at the beginning about maybe a family of three brothers or sisters might inherit mom and dad's house at some point in time. And that they could have formed or a possibility to form an LLC. So, and that would be even on something like that, a house and not intending to rent it out necessarily.
In a property that, we have a lot of files like that then, mm-hmm. and in properties, first of all, like beach houses, family mm-hmm. homes, cottages, things that are going to continue to be owned by the family, for an unlimited amount of time. You know, a limited liability company is a very wonderful structure mm-hmm. to put in place to give that ownership some sort of structure. Now, if a family is just a lot and a block in a subdivision and mm-hmm. they know that the house is just going to be sold when mother and father die, then that might be more detail than we need in that file. But mm-hmm. again, we need some nice provisions in the last will and testament that address some of these other issues like contribution by one child to mm-hmm. the exclusion of another child, things of that nature.
But if it's a property mm-hmm. that's going to continue to be held, then
yeah,
the LLC then also takes out of play the petition to partition then, right?
And also, you know, like a commercial property.
Right, right.
Any property that's going to continue to be held, notwithstanding the death of, you know, the parent or the grandparent, an LLC would certainly be something that should be discussed.
And then the governance of that property is by majority rule of the stockholders, so the shareholders there.
Or by the manager yeah. Having a manager owned, mm-hmm. LLC.
Okay.
Correct.
Again, great options for people to look at, but you kind of go back to where we started from years ago, Cecil, as you go back to the will.
You do. You go back to the governing document.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look, there can also be just a contract
mm-hmm.
concerning the obligations, use, and permissive use on a piece of property.
Right. Right.
Between various owners.
That's it. There you go. If you want to find out more and all those options, you can call on the folks at Harvell & Collins, Attorneys at Law, 726-9050-1107, Bridges Street in Moorhead City.